Storylines New England is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities.
The southern New Hampshire town of Northwood still has that small town feel. With a little over 3,500 year-round residents, the neighbors are friendly. A lot of town business is settled unofficially at the local dump, and longtime friends still gather at a centrally located diner. 75-year-old Robert Bailey has lived in Northwood all his life, as have several generations of his family. He and his wife of 50 years, Joanne, reflect on a Northwood of their younger days.
There were a lot of small farms in the area, and everybody got their living from what they got off the land. Everybody had their poultries and had their cows and pigs, and you raised your own crops, and of course the houses were few and far between. We always did our chores in the morning, and we'd walk to school and walk back at night.
We once knew everybody on our road and could say, you know, who they were. And it wasn't that we were gossipy and nosy. We just knew them, and they were our friends. And now, many of those same houses have been sold, and the people really want no part of being in a neighborhood.
But like many small towns in New England, Northwood is growing. Out-of-staters looking to escape the rat race of city life have found its lakes and woods perfect for summer cottages or second homes. And New Hampshire's low taxes and healthy environment have made the area desirable for businesses. Northwood is also a handy bedroom community for those who work in larger towns nearby. Construction permits doubled here from 2002 to 2003, and the building boom accelerated so much that Northwood's town meeting overwhelmingly approved a growth ordinance to keep it in check. In spite of these robust economic factors, though, it's the psychological impact of growth that most concerns longtime residents like the Baileys. There's a fear along the back roads and woodlands of rural New England that heedless development and hordes of outsiders are obliterating ways of life that generations have tried to uphold. Today on Storylines New England, we examine our sense of place, how we think about our land, how we see our neighbors, whether old or new, and how they look at us. All through a collection of short stories by one of America's most celebrated contemporary authors. Once again, Robert and Joanne Bailey.
We don't want to live anywhere else, and we don't plan to.
You know, because if you've lived in a place for 75 years, you kind of get in the habit of it. It's just like home, and this is our home, and neither one of us will live anywhere else.
I think once upon a time I said I would be happy to leave here and go somewhere else, but I don't feel that way anymore because it's not only do we have a place here for ourselves, but we create a place for other people.
From the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Storylines New England. I'm Laura Canoy.
And I'm Kevin Gardner. Storylines is a special 13-part radio project of the American Library Association that looks at the literature of New England as a way to better understand who we are as New Englanders and Americans. We've turned to Robert Frost to explore New England's landscape, looked at our region's political influence through Mark Twain's A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, and examined the social realities of our small towns in Edith Wharton's Summer and Grace Metalius's Peyton Place. This week on Storylines, our sense of place, our land, and our neighborhoods, and the tensions between old-timers and outsiders, all through Annie Proulx's Heart Songs and Other Stories.
Annie Proulx's Heart Songs and Other Stories explores a rural New England that isn't prosperous, peaceful, or picturesque. Set mostly in the scrabbling, blue-collar towns of northern Vermont, these 11 stories reveal a New England gripped by unease, resentment, decay, and desperation. Annie Proulx's Yankee residents are surly or eccentric or reclusive, their landscape craggy, depleted, and often threatening. This is the New England where yards are littered with junk cars and broken washing machines, where the old houses are in bad shape, where sullen, defeated families nurse their grievances in stony silence at the kitchen table, or explode in acts of violence or revenge.
Still, Annie Proulx's characters retain an ingrained pride, a pride of place, whether it's in their homesteads, their communities, or the land where they hunt, fish, or work. These are people whose deep roots and long-settled lifestyles entitle them with a sense of unshakable ownership of their surroundings. But in the stories of Heart Songs, pride and ownership always seem threatened or disrupted by outsiders. Flatlanders, some call them. Tourists, snowbirds, or them New Yorkers. They come, they build, they intrude. Eager to grab a piece of idyllic small-town New England, whether it actually exists or not. In story after story, Annie Prue captures the tension between those longtime Yankee insiders and the newcomers looking to fit in.
What can I tell you about the Moon Azures? They own the original old Clue homestead with its crooked door frames and worn stairs, Dr. and Mrs. Moon Azure, from Basil Tower, Maryland. I was born in that house. The Moon Azures come up from Maryland every June and go back in August. They scrape 9 layers of paint off the paneling in the parlor, point out to us the things they do to better the place. They clear out the dump, get a backhoe in to cut a wide driveway. They get somebody to sand the floors. They buy a horse. Dr. Moon Azure's hands get roughed up when he works on the stone wall. He holds them out and says admiringly, "Look at those hands." A faint smell comes from his clothes, the familiar brown odor of the old house. His wall buckles with the first frost heaves. The Moon Azures have weekend guests. We see the cars go by, out-of-state license plates on Mercedes and Saabs. When the wind is right, we can hear their toneless voices knocking together like sticks of wood, tot, 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 tot. The horse gets out and is killed on the road. Nobody knows what kind of doctor he is. They go to him when some woman from Massachusetts backs over the edge of the gravel pit. Somebody drives to the Moon Azures and asks him to come, but he won't. "I don't practice," he says. "Call the ambulance." He offers them the use of his phone.
E. Annie Prue was born in suburban Connecticut. She made her way to the Vermont countryside as a college student and eventually became a journalist. For some time, Prue made her living writing how-to manuals about country life, from grape growing to fence mending. She didn't begin to publish fiction until she was in her 50s, but once she started, her success was swift. She won the National Book Award and the Pulitzer Prize for The Shipping News in 1993 and has produced 3 other acclaimed novels, including Accordion Crimes and the recent That Old Ace in the Hole. But it's Heart Songs, her first collection of short fiction, that gives us Annie Prue's unsentimental picture of New England as a growing, changing battleground where longtime residents fight to preserve their traditions while outsiders try to remake the region in their own image.
Today on Storylines New England, we're looking at how we define, protect, and adapt to our sense of place as we read through Annie Prue's Heart Songs and other stories. And we want to hear from you, your stories. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-6477. How do you define your sense of place? How does the land define us? What happens when outsiders, whoever they may be, move in? Have you seen your small town grow or change? Do you see that as a threat or an opportunity? Again, our number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-6477.
Joining us now from the studios of Wyoming Public Radio is Annie Prue herself. Annie Prue, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Delighted to be back in New England.
And with us in the studio here in New Hampshire is Kent Ryden, Associate Professor of American and New England Studies at the University of Southern Maine. He's also author of Mapping the Invisible Landscape, Folklore Writing and the Sense of Place. Also another book, Landscape with Figures. Kent Ryden, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Annie Prue, we want to turn to you first. You moved from suburban Connecticut to rural Vermont, where you found inspiration for Heart Songs and other stories.
Wait, no. I've never lived in a suburban anywhere.
Oh, I shouldn't describe it as suburban. Okay, well, what was it? It was Connecticut, though, right?
Yes, it was Connecticut, but at the time I was there when I was a child, it was very rural.
Ah.
Okay. I've never lived in a suburban environment anywhere. I've lived in 2 cities in my life, Tokyo and New York City, both for short times. But other than that, 69 years has been spent in pretty deep country.
All right. Well, let's get to the deep country of rural Vermont. And thank you for correcting me on that. Get to the deep country of rural Vermont, where you found your inspiration for Heart Songs. In a way, did you feel like an outsider yourself, you know, moving from Connecticut to rural Vermont?
It wasn't quite that way. My whole life has been moving from one place to another. My father was in textiles. We moved constantly, sometimes only a year in one place. So we lived all over the place, from I think every New England state and North Carolina and a few others thrown in. But going back to Vermont, because I had spent some years as a child in Vermont, we lived in Brookfield while my father worked in Massachusetts and just came up on weekends. So as an adult, it was a return to a place that had been beloved in my childhood.
Did you ever feel, you know, your characters in Heart Songs are deeply resentful of the outsiders coming in. Did you ever feel that resentment directed toward you, Annie, when you were in Vermont, that your characters in Heart Songs feel so sharply?
Not in the sense that characters in the stories do, but I'm a professional outsider. As a writer, and most writers are, they say you can always tell who the writer is at a party because that's the person standing against the wall watching everybody else. So, yeah, the outsider's posture is familiar and certainly at this point in life, comfortable. It's not unpleasant. I'm an observer.
How do you, though, Annie, get inside enough to write from the insider point of view that you portray in Heart Songs and Other Stories? How do you do that?
Imagination and sharp observation and familiarity with the subject, the place, and the people. A lot of research goes into things and a lot of tromping around outside because landscape and place are enormously important to everything I write.
Annie, I'm curious about the specificity of your Northern Vermont characters. Have you found similarities between those characters, their circumstances and their attitudes and aspirations with similar groups in other parts of the country, or is there something unique about
absolutely.
These people?
The rural people in every place, in Texas, Vermont, Newfoundland, Wyoming, have great similarities as well as great differences. In large part, I think rural people are in conflict with the modern administrative state, and that produces a resentment both of government and laws, especially laws regulating hunting and livestock, trapping, tree cutting, even foraging for wild berries and mushrooms, called trespassing these days.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things are controlled by distant government forces. And these rules are contrary to traditional rural ways where property rights included the notion and practice of commons, whether woodlot or village grazing, or just cooperative changing work on the small hill farms.
And you make it fairly clear in the stories and Heart Songs that this interpositioning of the government of faraway forces doesn't really, on a fundamental basis, change the attitudes of the people who are still living out in the backwoods areas.
Well, that's why we have poaching. It may not change attitudes, but at the same time, I've noticed that people who come from generations of families living in rural places are now bereft of a great deal of woods lore and folklore that used to be common. People who are fourth and fifth generation residents in an area don't know the plants, they don't know some of the animals, they don't know a great deal about what's around them.
I know exactly what you mean, and we're going to pick this subject up again as we go on through the hour. Kent Ryden, would you chime in on this for us? What is your feeling about how times have changed our relationship to what we see around us in the landscape, particularly in New England?
Well, New England is a place that has seen a lot of development, has seen a lot of new people move in. Excuse me. And so even on the physical surface of the region, you know, there's a lot of change. There's suburbanization, there's sprawl, you know, there's the moving in of national companies and commercial landscapes that go along with those. So there's a sense of a kind of increasingly homogenized landscape, a landscape that looks more and more like that of other parts of the country, you know, other regions. And for people who live in some of these towns who have a lot of identity invested there, though I have a lot of personal and family history, there can be a real threat when there's that sort of change, because on that landscape they've attached memories, they've attached knowledge, they've attached experiences, and as the landscape itself changes, those memories and experiences and histories gets also kind of erased, eradicated, dislodged, and you look around at a world that doesn't resemble the one that you used to know, and then you look in the mirror and say, well, am I the same person? Mm. Because the landscape that shaped me is being reshaped.
Can you elaborate on that? You know, give us an example of that, the way that someone's very character might change if their landscape changes. It doesn't have to be a real example, but a for instance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking of the passage from the story that was read in the introduction to this program today, with the outsiders moving in, the Moon Azures. And they really see the town they move into, the house they move into, not as home or not as a real place, a real community, but as an idea.
It's right. A showpiece.
It's yeah. a show. It's a piece of the image of New England rather than a real gritty, dirty, difficult place. And in that story, there's some business with the photograph album. And the people who live in the house are trying to guard the photograph album. No, we don't want to turn it over and have these pictures published for national consumption, made quaint, made ridiculous. So it's as though they're trying to hang on to their own identity, their own images, their own reality, rather than have it be commodified, prostituted, made into something that, from their perspective, it's not.
Annie, could you comment on what Kent is saying also? I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, he's right on the mark. For that particular family, the clues, they've lost everything and they've had to sell the house. They've been put in sharp economic straits, and really all they have left that's family identity is this album of photographs that the Moon Azures desperately want. And they want them, the Moon Azures want the photographs because they're quaint and they're real. It's like people going into an antique shop and buying an ancestor portrait that isn't their ancestor, that sort of thing. But somehow or other, the clues are sharply aware that they must not let this last thing go.
They don't really want to be the supplier of authenticity for cultural right. tourists, do they? You're listening to Storylines New England. I'm Kevin Gardner, along with Laura Kanoy, and we're looking at a side of rural New England that the tourist brochures ignore as actively as they possibly can. It's a scrappier, messier, scruffier New England, as shown in the pages of Annie Proulx's Heart Songs and Other Stories. And we want to hear from you. Are you a native of northern New England? How do you feel about the city folks moving in? Have you recently moved to rural New England from a city? What kinds of issues are surrounding the growth and the opportunities or the problems in your immediate vicinity? Give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Annie Proulx, we've been talking about things that changed and challenges to people who've been living in an area for a very long time, but there's also a strong traditional strain thematically in the stories of Heart Songs, and one of those things is a theme, I guess, endemic to a lot of literature about New England, and that is a theme of loneliness and solitude. There is a there's an enormous brooding sense of terrible personal loneliness that afflicts so many of the characters in Heart Songs. And I'm curious about whether or not in your early years in Vermont, when you first encountered the state and it became for you a place that you wanted to return to later on in life, did you have any sense of just how isolated some people in the backcountry of New England really are?
Yeah, I think from very early time I was aware of that. And there are, especially in comparison with Wyoming, which is an exceedingly warm, friendly place. The people are very, very different from New Englanders, though mm-hmm. their situations are similar. But I was aware of this solitary shadow that falls over many, many New Englanders in rural places.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder if part of it doesn't have to do with the fact that the hill farms were somewhat isolated. Not to say that Wyoming ranches aren't isolated. You can go 30, 40, 50 miles before the next place, even now. But those hill farms, getting up them wasn't that easy. The steep hills, the difficulty of joining your neighbor, it wasn't quite the same as jumping on a horse and galloping to the next ranch on level ground. But for me, the fascinating thing about this is how such personalities react to change. And for the last 10 or 15 years, through the medium of fiction, I've been trying to catch pieces of North American rural lives clamped in the pincers of change through place and landscape. And social change is what attracts me and mm-hmm. what I try to catch in the stories.
You mentioned that folks in Wyoming and other parts of the country are a little more open, a little more friendly than the kinds of people you find in New England. Do you think hill country New Englanders, backwoods New Englanders, tend to impose a kind of isolation on themselves emotionally that isn't found elsewhere?
I wonder about that. I don't really know the answer to it, but I do think, and I see it in myself too, that you can develop a taste for that kind of position in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's an odd thing, and I think about it a lot without coming to any conclusions.
You know, Kent, I don't want you to come to some conclusions, but I am curious as to what you think about this discussion. We've been talking about landscape and how it shapes people. And, you know, as Annie said, there's a solitary shadow that she sensed from people. Do you think that that's an especially New England trait?
It's, in a way, a kind of counter-New England trait, by which I mean the historically constructed image of New England, the tourist New England, isn't a lonely New England, but it's a sort of idealized community. You know, it's the place in your mind where you would most like to live, to have those helpful Yankee neighbors who engage in barn raisings and things like that. And that's why many tourists come to New England. I think that's why many people move to New England. They want to participate in this idealized sense of community. And so stories like the ones in Heart Songs and a lot of other contemporary regional literature that focus on this loneliness, this isolation, the solitary shadow, are really sort of writing against.
Right. It's very surprising, isn't it?
The historically constructed image of New England. I don't think it's surprising, really, because that traditional image is very romanticized.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sort of a realistic counterbalance to it.
Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead, Ken.
Oh, just to finish, which I think is actually much more respectful of both the fictional characters and the people who live in the communities upon which those fictional characters are based. It takes their lives seriously. It doesn't turn them into what I think of as happy dancing peasants. You know, they it treats them like the real people they are in the historic circumstances that they've experienced.
Right. I just to chime in personally, I mean, that's why I love this book, Heart Songs and Other Stories, because, you know, you can get the saccharine image anywhere, and it was good to get the real deal. Let's go to the phones. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. This is Storylines New England. The book we're looking at this week is Annie Proulx's Heart Songs and Other Stories. Annie Proulx joins us herself along with Kent Ryden. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. Annie Proulx joins us from Wyoming Public Radio. Kent's in the studio. He's an associate professor of American and New England Studies at the University of Southern Maine. Let's go to Greensboro, Vermont. Aaron joins us from there. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I apologize if I'm picking up on some issues that were covered already or points of view you discussed.
That's all right, Aaron. Go ahead.
Yeah. I moved up here to Vermont from Pennsylvania about 6 months ago. And I just wanted to point out that it's not strictly a dichotomy of attitudes between people who are long-term residents or natives here and people who move into the area. I myself was looking for a place where I didn't have to build a new house, and so I bought a very old farmhouse and some land. And that was definitely an ethic that I had about coming up here. And in the 6 months that I've been here, I've actually seen a new house go up, in my field of view, that is a cookie-cutter house. You know, it's a prefab thing. It was assembled on site and put up there. And I'm not criticizing the fact that it was done, but I just wanted to point out that, you know, this is the approach that somebody who is a long-term resident in the area has taken, and they wanted to, you know, move up to Greensboro, where there was a little more land and space than they had at a different place.
Aaron, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
How do you feel you have been treated by the natives since you just moved up there 6 months ago?
I felt very welcomed by the folks in my neighborhood and in town. And I think that that's because they see that I did come up here with an intention to fit into the cultural landscape and even the agricultural landscape. You know, I do have a purpose for coming up here and purchasing some land. It's not just kind of a rural dream that I wanted to live out.
Now, do I have your story right, Aaron? You bought an old house. You're living in an old farmhouse. You're trying to sort of live in with the landscape as it exists, right?
Right.
But did you say that someone else who is from the area just built a sort of cookie-cutter house?
Yes, that's correct.
And you sound disappointed in that.
I guess I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What does Aaron's story say to you, Annie Prue?
Well, it says to me he's become an old inhabitant already.
In 6 months. Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. And that, an architect was talking to me the other day about the wonderful old New England hill houses with the long L fastened on that we all know. And we always thought they were so you could go from the house out to the barn without having to go outside so you wouldn't get lost in the blizzard and so forth. And he says that's not so. He said it was strictly a fashion.
New Englanders aren't known for doing things just because they're fashionable.
No.
Right?
Perhaps the
cookie-cutter
house is becoming the fashion in the caller's part of the world.
Kent, what does this story say to you, our caller's story?
It also suggests to me that the caller may have more invested personally and imaginatively in the traditional Vermont landscape than do the people who have lived there for years, who might have very deep roots there, because he values his old house. He wants the landscape to look a certain way. He doesn't want these modern cookie-cutter intrusions, you know, whereas to the person who built the house, it may just be a matter of, I need a house. This is affordable. It can be built quickly. And it will keep the rain off my head. That's all I want. And not necessarily acting on the sense of a certain authentic, real landscape that has to be imitated over and over again through more recent acts of building.
I'm so glad you raised that point, because coming up after a break, we're going to talk a little bit about how insiders and outsiders view landscape differently. So stay with that, and we will also take a lot more of your calls. 1-800-892-6477 is the number here on Storylines New England, 1-800-892-6477.
If you want more information on Storylines New England or the books we're reading, visit our website, storyline.ala.org, or check out your local public library. Libraries all have copies of the books, they have program schedules, and our terrific discussion guides. I'm Kevin Gardner.
And I'm Laura Canoy. You're listening to Storylines New England.
Storylines New England is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Thank you. From the studios of New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Storylines New England. I'm Laura Kanoy.
And I'm Kevin Gardner. Each week on Storylines, we look at a particular New England author's work as a way to try and better understand ourselves as New Englanders, where we've been, where we are, and where we're heading. Today, we're looking at Annie Proulx's Heart Songs and Other Stories as a way to understand how New Englanders and Americans define their sense of place. Proulx's collection of 11 short stories paints a picture of craggy, deep-rooted Yankees living and struggling among the rocky remnants of Vermont's northern farmland. Their lives aren't perfect, their lawns aren't manicured, and their families are always a bit dysfunctional, yet they hold tight to a certain pride, pride of community, pride of home, a pride of place.
Still, these New England natives always seem to be threatened in some way by outsiders, tourists, snowbirds, and those looking for an escape from the rat race. Many locals feel these outsiders will not only take away the land and the rural feel of their small towns, but will cheapen and trivialize their culture and their customs with their naive enthusiasm for the rural life.
Snipe went to the Twilights every Wednesday. He said nothing to them about an album. Each time was like the first time, the same chair, the same headlong rushes into the next unknown tunes, the same closed silence with no talk of the music or the way it was played, just on and on in the gathering dusk. Snipe was carried along by the sound. He played in tune and on time, yet he rode on top of the music like a boat on a wave because old Eno wouldn't make room for him. Would not let them open the set pattern of their songs, even a crack to let him play a riff or break or move out a little from the body of the sound. Snipe, the outsider, was cast into a background corner, a foreign tourist who did not know the language, who would not stay, who was only passing through.
Proulx's exploration of the tension between outsiders and insiders hits home in many small New England towns, places like Northwood, New Hampshire, where Storylines producer Keith Shields spoke with Robert and Joanne Bailey. 75-year-old Robert Bailey has lived in Northwood all his life, as generations of Baileys did before him.
My grandmother lived just down the road, and she ran a farm along with her husband, my grandfather, and they were the early settlers in Northwood. And they built the original houses here in Northwood. And now there's no farms left in Northwood at all. They're all gone. Northwood still didn't grow that fast until just the last 10 years. It's really blown kind of out of proportion here now. And the new ones come in, we try to get them to get interested in town affairs, and you probably end up with one out of 20 that's families that are interested in not just sleeping here. To keep the town going, you got to get the new people involved. It's surprising. They come to meetings and they do get interested. My wife had a historical meeting last night, and I couldn't believe the younger people showed up and are interested. Even though they moved in here, they are interested in our historical background. And they're no different than we are. I mean, their minds are the same as we are. They want open space, and a problem that's happened in the last few years is developers are moving in, buying large chunks of land, and then they proceed to build houses and sell them as fast as they can build them in the last 5 years. And, of course, that does change your atmosphere around in the local pieces of land. You can't help it. But that's what we're trying to control, is still keep our open space and keep our rural town roads. But we got a couple of developments that is going to end up around almost 100 houses up on one little, almost one-lane road. And now that's when you get into a problem with you got to reconstruct that highway, and who is going to pay for it?
That's what disturbs me, is that if the people who are building could have some sense of what we are instead of imposing their style on what we are. One of the things that bothers both of us the most is the developers who have only, they apparently know how to build only one type of house. They're generally two stories, or three even. They're big and boxy. If you come up our road, you'll find a big house and a little house, and one house is near the road and one house is back from the road. It gives us a look, a variety, that now the developers aren't adhering to. There's one road here in town, just as a for instance, that a few years ago didn't have any farmhouse on it, and then there were two. Now, that whole length of road has been sold by one person, and a developer has built a whole row of houses that are just exactly the same. And so that's no longer Northwood. It's another place. That's my objection. Of course growth is going to come, but it could be done better than it is.
Our visit with Joanne and Robert Bailey was produced by Storylines producer Keith Shields. Today on Storylines New England, we're reading from Annie Pooh's Heart Songs and Other Stories and talking about how we define our sense of place. New Englanders, especially rural New Englanders, tend to hold tight to their land and their property and their sense of community. Yet, as we heard, New England is growing unstoppably as outsiders move in, build on open space, engage in politics, and sometimes challenge our customs and traditions. We want to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-6477.
And we're joined in the studio today by Kent Ryden, Associate Professor of American and New England Studies at the University of Southern Maine. He's the author of a couple of books about the sense of place and specifically about that sense in the region of New England, including the recent Landscape with Figures, Nature and Culture in New England. And from Wyoming Public Radio, we have Annie Pooh herself, the author of Heart Songs and Other Stories, the book we're thinking about today. She's also the author of the great big piece of magic known as The Shipping News, which won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award and probably a wheelbarrow full of other awards as well. And she is the author of the forthcoming collection of short stories with the marvelous title Bad Dirt. And Annie Pooh, we were talking before our break about the different ways that, and in fact our caller pointed this out too, by implication if not directly, about the very different ways that people who move to an area and people who grow up in an area look at the land, the completely different things they see when they look at it. In Heart Songs, we see over and over again a vast gulf between the those who are native to a place and those who come into it and look at it with very different eyes. Can you give us briefly a little bit of a description about what the biggest differences are between the way the natives in the Heart Song stories and those who come into the area from away look at the exact same pieces of land?
Probably outside work is the biggest difference. Mm-hmm. I don't mean just yard work, but in a family that's been on the land for generations, spending time out in the woodlot or sugaring, getting in the wood for the winter, and doing a little trapping to bring in some extra money, and driving the cows up to pasture, knowing where the best blueberries grow and raspberries, gathering mushrooms and other things, knowing the names of things, understanding where the frost settles first so you don't put your garden there. All these things are the cumulative knowledge of generations. And you can't come into a place and learn it overnight. You just can't. It takes a long time to know this stuff. And that, I think, is the very biggest gulf. Folks who come mm-hmm. in, especially from an urban or suburban region to a rural place, don't have the knowledge and they don't know how to learn.
Right.
And there's no school for this kind of thing. There's no field school for learning what's around you or for looking at landscape, for understanding weather and climate and latitude and longitude and what minerals are in the stones and the winds and the hours of sunlight and what kind of rainfall to expect and how deep does the snow really get and what was the worst winter and what insects are there and what their season. All of these things you accumulate over decades and generations of experience. And that's what's missing. And with the best will in the world, you can't learn it quickly.
So many tiny, little, eensy-weensy, minute, critically important things. Kent Ryden, same question.
Yeah, the insider and the outsider look at the exact same landscape, and they see two different things. The outsider sees the landscape as a strictly visual field that they can project meanings onto. New England means this, the Midwest means this, whatever. Whereas to the insider, it's more a field of experience, a word that Annie just used, that is not visible to the outsider, something that the outsiders aren't really privy to unless they spend years listening, getting out in the field, having their own experiences. But also perhaps the outsider, ironically enough, is frequently better able to articulate the meanings of the landscapes. This is what this place means to me, because they have that distance sort of held out from them so they can examine it and think about it. Whereas to the insider, the place is so close to them that it's difficult to get that distance, the sort of distance that, say, a writer can achieve, in order to, in a kind of abstract way, say, these are the ways I see the landscape. This is what it means to me. This is how I feel connected to it. This is why it's important to me. The analogy I like to use is asking a fish what it's like to live in water all the time. The fish can't answer that question because unless it's been caught and released, it's never been out of water.
Let's go to the phones, both of you. 1-800-892-6477. This is Storylines New England. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with my co-host Kevin Gardner, and our guests are Kent Ryden and Annie Prue. 1-800-892-6477. The book we're exploring this week on Storylines is Annie Prue's Heart Songs and Other Stories. Let's go to Burlington, Vermont next, and Anne joins us from there. Hi, Anne. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, it's great to hear what you have to share about the landscapes of the rural life. And it's interesting for myself, having been born, died in the wool New Englander, but a southern New Hampshire girl myself. And I remember my dad and I, we'd go camping and we'd go, oh, there's a car from Massachusetts. Damn, they're moving up here and they're coming. That damn Taxachusetts, they should stay where they belong. And then as a young woman, I went to the University of Vermont to be on the ski team. And then I became much more enamored of Vermont, realizing, you know, that it's a much more progressive kind of place to be. But having spent summers in Maine and the, you know, lakes of New Hampshire, Winnipesaukee, Wentworth, and Mount Shakora, there truly is a beauty everywhere. And as a young woman traveling across the United States, that's what truly inspired me, is there is a landscape of every place. You know, New Jersey, for instance, the Garden State. We all make real fun of New Jersey, being the armpit of New York, so we've heard, but it's also the Garden State. And so there's something absolutely lovely and beautiful there.
Well, Anne, as a dyed-in-the-wool New Englander, as you put it, how do you think our sort of rough, rocky landscape has shaped you?
Oh, I definitely have a strong character, and I used it to come back to New Hampshire to get out the Kerry vote this year. And I was, in particular, speaking with seniors in the area of Charlestown, New Hampshire, and kidding them, well, you know something, the old granite face fell down this year. It may just be time for good old Republican New Hampshire to get with the program and go Democratic.
Well, Anne, it's great to hear from you, and thank you for joining us. Let's go to another New Hampshire person. Dan from Contoocook, New Hampshire, is joining us. Hi, Dan. Welcome. Go ahead.
Hello, Annie. I have deep roots in a New England hill farm, and we believe that the reason the farm is on the hill is due to the principle we call carry in, carry out. You ever heard of that one?
No. Explain a little more.
Manure is heavier than hay.
Okay.
And so you put the barn above the hay fields, and it's easier on the draft animals. And that's what I was taught. Personally, I think it's less buggy on the hill.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure, Dan.
But that's our story. We settled here in 1820. I heard a lecture by a bright fellow from away one time a few years ago, and he suggested that what we need in these towns is a new kind of welcome wagon, a sort of a group of old-timers that would visit the new people from time to time and sit with them and eat their food and let them do something for them. Of course, that's how we feel about and include them in their conversation, in which they tell them the history of their house. My sense of things, both in Contoocook and in Kennebunkport, where I occupied family holdings, is that a house will be sold after 100 years in the same family, the same hands, and then be sold 3 times in the next 10 years. And all of the rules of the house are lost, which shutters go where, and so the shutters tend to flap in the wind because they don't all have the springs and clips in the same places and so forth, and the buildings suffer a good deal. I wanted to tell a story about the Rob Morrill house here in Contoocook. Rob gave me his musical instruments mostly before he died, thought we could use them. And then the next fellow who moved into the house, I introduced myself to him and told him a few stories. And he gave me all the rough edge lumber, which he couldn't deal with. And then he sold it. And the next fella gave me the apple trees. He didn't want them anymore, so I made spoons out of them. And the third outfit has just recently given me the lilacs and a few unknown shrubs, which I and my students are carving spoons out of. And I just keep visiting the new people who buy this house.
Well, you've benefited from this, Dan.
I benefit over and over again.
Outsiders are all good things, or have been good to you, then.
Sure. You know, I see them. We see ourselves as, we value ourselves in terms of what we can do for our neighbors. Our value to our neighbors is our value to ourselves. When I see a new outfit move in, the negative thing I say is, well, chances are he won't be able to fix my chainsaw, like the fellow who used to live in that big house up on the hill.
But he's a good cook, so maybe he'll make me something.
Exactly. The positive thing I say is, well, maybe he's a cellist.
Well, Dan, you raise a point that I wanted to ask Kent Ryden. I mean, you know, so often when we talk about this outsider-insider growth issue, people are sort of saying, oh, it's terrible. You know, is there anything good about outsiders coming to rural New England?
Well, it depends on who you ask, I suppose.
Sure, right.
Well, in a way, I suppose it might reverse a sort of historical pattern by which many towns in New England or northern New England for years have been losing population, you know, have been losing jobs. You know, one reason that there were hill farms was that was the last place to put a farm, you know, the ultimate extension of New England agriculture into lands that in many cases couldn't really support it. So a lot of the farms literally went downhill. You know, there's been a long-term pattern of rural depopulation in New England, a job loss, economic difficulty. So if outsiders move in, there can be a reinvigoration of what's going on in the town. There can be perhaps more money. You know, there can be perhaps more development, which has its downside, of course, but which can also bring in jobs and shopping places and things like that. Now, these people moving in aren't evenly distributed, aren't necessarily moving into the towns where, you know, they can do the most good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, I think, a sort of a change in New England, whereby one image, you know, one sense of who is a New Englander, what one landscape, one cultural landscape, is really morphing into something else in response to both the attractiveness of New England as an image, but also in response to these longer-term historical patterns that I'm talking about.
It's interesting that you say, you know, it depends on who you ask. I do a daily show here in New Hampshire, and we will sometimes do shows about sprawl, and we'll get calls from New Hampshire's North Country, and they say, hey, Laura, bring some of that sprawl up here, would you?
Exactly.
You know, so
You're listening to Storylines New England. This is Kevin Gardner along with Laura Kanoy. We're talking about Annie Proulx's Heart Songs and Other Stories with Annie herself and with Kent Ryden, who you just heard. Our number here is 1-800-892-6477. And Annie Proulx, in spite of our recent caller Dan's proactive approach to newcomers coming into the neighborhood, and Kent's notes about what good can come of the influx of others into an old place. In many of the stories of Heart Songs, there's a curious kind of passivity in some of the long-term residents. It's an emotional passivity. It's a passivity in the face of change that comes over their neighborhoods. I guess I just want to ask you to talk a little bit about how you came to observe that, and what do you think it means about long-time residents of backcountry New England?
I think that long-time residents of any rural place, through generations of experience, have learned that the most important thing you can do in difficult situations is endure, stick it out, stay where you are, get tough with the situation by hunkering down, by being a turtle. Endurance is very much a New England characteristic.
So, excuse me, passivity is probably the wrong word to use here then, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. Mm-hmm. There is passivity in it, though. But when a region is flooded so violently by change as New England is, and as Newfoundland is, and the Texas Panhandle and Wyoming too, I think the first reaction to most people who've been there a long time and feel like they are part of the landscape is to hunker down and tough it out.
Kent Ryden, what do you think about that question? Have you observed that sort of reaction? Put your head down, get through it, endure it, see what comes next, see if the next thing will be better among the New Englanders that you know?
Yeah, there is some of that, a kind of quiet adaptation, I guess you could say. For instance, in Maine, in recent times, there have been some towns which have voted to basically go out of business, to dissolve their local governments to be run as, well, wards of the state, basically, which involves some loss of identity, but also brings some benefits. It's not really a throwing up of hands and saying, oh, we're poor victims of circumstances here, but saying, how can we get by? How can we adapt here? And it's also a literary pattern in a lot of Northern New England literature as well. I'm thinking of, say, some of Robert Frost's poems, where the characters in the poems have difficult lives, but they say, well, this is my lot. You know, I'll summarize it with a few folksy aphorisms and then go out and do some work.
And he objects to that attitude as well. Often in the same poem, the great poem Home Burial, for instance, opposes that attitude against a much more emotional and reactive one.
Exactly.
We have time now to take another call, and we're going to hear from Joanne, who joins us from Chelsea, Vermont. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
I'm responding, really, to the caller from Greensboro, who had been up here for 6 months, and he talked about how he had bought an old farmhouse and fixed it up, and then a native had built a cookie-cutter house. And I feel like, you know, it's great that people move up and buy and preserve the old farmhouses. I mean, that's really important, and I think it's appreciated. But it seems a little bit judgmental because it's about economy in a lot of cases. I mean, there's only so many ancestral farmhouses. And the population is growing, and it's not as though a native Vermonter has a choice, really, as to whether they want to fix up an old farmhouse. I mean, a lot of times people coming here, even if they're not, rich where they used to live, are able to do that.
It costs a lot to buy one of those old fixer
it
uppers,
does,
doesn't it?
It does, and it's a tremendous amount
and
of work.
And they keep costing you a lot, right?
And you can't borrow money from a bank if it's not energy efficient. And so it often comes down to the economy. And so, you know, it's a little bit frustrating because we don't all have the luxury of making decisions about lovely ideals.
Isn't it the truth?
Joanne, thanks for calling. Annie Proulx, your quick thoughts on Joanne's call.
Well, once again, it's a question of beauty versus utility or perceived beauty. And sometimes you do what you can do. And that's a good point, that not everybody has the wherewithal to repair and get through the year in an old house, which can be drafty and leaky, and the banks are not highly favorable toward lending money on these places. But it's hard to know what's in the heart of the people who built the little cracker box house, if they had their druthers and if they had a fatter back account, if they had time to do the work themselves, what kind of house would they have built? Mm-hmm. Or is the one that's there just perfectly fine and they don't see it as a part of the landscape, that ideal shape of the old hill houses and so forth doesn't matter to them. And then you have to ask yourself, well, why doesn't it matter? Why doesn't somebody who's lived here for a long time understand that that's part of the landscape, that's part of the character of the place? And if anybody's got an answer to that one, I'd be interested, because I sure don't.
Ken Radden, I have one last question for you. We've been talking about growth and the pressures and tensions between insiders and outsiders, and yet New England sells this bucolic landscape to entice people to come here, either as tourists to live, and then we scream bloody murder when people do come. Now, what's that about?
Well, I think people want them to come, and then they want them to go home again. basically, it's the joke about putting out a sign at the state border that says, next time, just send the money.
We want them to come here as tourists, but not necessarily to build houses and have kids that have to go to school and so forth.
Exactly. You know, come, leave some money, consume the region in the form of lobster or scenery or clothes from L.L. Bean or what have you, and then take that memory back to New Jersey or Massachusetts with you.
Well, Kent Radden, it's been really nice to meet you. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Kent Radden, he joined us in the studio. He's an associate professor of American and New England Studies at the University of Southern Maine and author of Mapping the Invisible Landscape and Landscape with Figures. Annie Pruitt, we want to thank you very much for taking the time, too.
My pleasure, and I just wanted to add one little thing. The lady who mentioned New Jersey and Garden State in the same breath, Newark was once the site of the finest apple orchards in North America.
All right. And you have made our New Jersey-based producer, Keith Shields, very happy, Annie. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Annie Pruitt, and thanks, Kent Radden. For more information on Storylines New England or the books in our series, visit our website at storylines.ala.org.
Storylines New England is produced by Keith Shields. Our engineer is Andrew Walsh. We had production help from Dan Colgan, Robert Caldwell, and Ty Fraley. George F. Peel performed our readings. Our library discussion guides were written by Bill Ott, and Georgia Lomax coordinates the participating libraries.
The executive producer of the Storylines America series is Paul Zalis. Storylines New England comes to you from the studios of New Hampshire Public Radio in Concord, New Hampshire. I'm Kevin Gardner.
And I'm Laura Canoy. Join us next week for Storylines New England.
Storylines New England is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Next time on Storylines New England, the Native American experience and how two different New England authors remember and retell it.
William Epps, a Pequot Indian, exposes European mistreatment of New England's natives, while Mary Rowlandson offers the personal narrative of a Puritan woman captured by natives during the brutal King Philip's War.
Two books, two versions of New England's Native American story on the next Storylines New England.